I've only been sailing once, and I can say it was not a particularly good experience. When you're raised in the Rocky Mountains, sailing is not something your family is likely to do. Still, thoughts of being out on the ocean in a wind-powered ship intrigued me. The freedom, the beauty, the thrill of sliding through the water, the casual but elegant clothes like the Kennedys on a Saturday afternoon. A dockside drink and a good meal at the end of the day, a gorgeous sunset. This is what sailing is about, surely, is it not? So a few years ago, when the opportunity to go sailing on Chesapeake Bay came my way, I said yes. The day trip started quite like my fantasy predicted. Beautiful sunny weather with a steady, gentle breeze. An easy drive to the dock and a quick check of the boat before we motored out of the marina. I was with a good friend who had never sailed either before. But we were with the boat's owners, a husband and wife team who took very different approaches to sailing. The husband sailed. The wife enjoyed the sailing. And since both were well into their 70s, my friend and I quickly discovered why we had been invited in the first place. We were to be deckhands for the day. My fantasy of a leisurely day on the water quickly came crashing down as the boat's owner started barking orders. He steered, and my friend and I did the rest. In this sailing crash course, we were to call the boat's riggings lines, not ropes. We were to know which side was port and which side was starboard. Fore and aft, we raced as quickly as we could, pulling and fastening whichever line was needed. As the boom swept across the boat to change directions, we both ducked to get out of its way for fear of being knocked off the craft entirely. Rope burns, or should I say line burns? Sun burns. Fear and anxiety turned this Chesapeake Bay adventure into a sailing nightmare. Rather than yachting for a day, it felt as if we had been captured by the pirates of the Caribbean and pressed into service. When the boat owners began drinking martinis mid-sail, my friend and I sincerely wondered if we would ever see dry land in one piece again. How often do we let our fantasies get us into something, only to find the reality of the situation is much harder than anything we could have imagined? How often do we let our hopes blind us to the inevitable difficulties? How often do we expect something to be one way, only to find out that it is not that way at all? Each of us has gone out blithely on a sailing adventure, only to find that sailing is hard work and involves real danger. My guess is that there is something in the human psyche that makes us overly optimistic about a plan. This optimism downplays reality. It helps us take the first steps on the adventure, and it may be the only thing that gets us out of the safety of our own homes on a daily basis. One of the flaws in their Calvinist theology that our Puritan ancestors discovered here in New England pertained to God's omniscience. In the strictest sense of Calvinism practiced by our religious forebears, God knows everything. God knows how many fish there are in the sea. God knows where earthquakes and hurricanes and blizzards will hit. God knows every planet and sun and asteroid in the universe. And God knows our innermost thoughts, too. Our Puritan ancestors found that rather than making God more powerful, this theology made God quite irrelevant in day-to-day life. For you see, the logic says, if God is omniscient, then God knows how and when the world will end. God knows who will go to heaven and who won't. God knows when each of us will die and how, and there is nothing we can do about it. Ultimately, this Calvinist theology short-circuits the cockeyed optimism that we need to head off on any sailing adventure. It turns all of us into fatalists, and it results in the twisted logic that says some people can tell who God favors, and that is based on their wealth and their power. You might be surprised that this form of prosperity theology is alive and well in the United States today, but it is. Under prosperity theology, God loves the people in Concord more than God loves the people in Lowell. Under prosperity theology, your place in heaven is only as assured as your ability to pay your mortgage and send your children to good colleges. In strict Calvinism, all is predetermined, but you have to keep up appearances to show that you are saved. It's no wonder that our Unitarian ancestors discarded Calvinism about 250 years ago or so. And it's no wonder that our Universalist ancestors got their start around the time of the Revolutionary War by criticizing Calvinism's salvation of the elect. The old joke is that the Universalists thought God was too good to damn them, and the Unitarians thought they were too good to be damned. Either way, our ancestors decided that they would rather have a God who was just as surprised by life's events as they were. And I think that this is still the case. A hymn from my Presbyterian childhood declares, "Immortal, invisible, God only wise, in light inaccessible, hid from our eyes." But that does not fit us. If God is to be a useful construct at all, God must play by the same rules we do. And as a co-creative force in the universe, the laws of physics govern God just like they govern everything else. Without free will, without agency, human life is meaningless. Likewise, a world of pure human agency, ungoverned by morals and ethics, makes for cruel conditions for most of the world's population. The trick is not only to get the ship to sail somewhere, it's to keep all the passengers on board, too. 21st century Unitarian Universalism, in which this congregation plays a crucial role, will live or die based on our ability to simultaneously define ourselves and cooperate with others. First Parish in Concord will thrive or fail based on its ability to offer a clear religious identity and its willingness to work with other people of faith at the same time. Our congregation must exist for its people, but not only for its people. First Parish in Concord has to have a mission that is greater than being First Parish in Concord. Like all great ships, to be of any use at all, it must sail somewhere. And that gets me back to the topic of deckhands. When you arrived at the dock at 20 Lexington Road this morning, you found a gleaming ship being loaded. You found its tall white mast rising to meet the sky, its gold crow's nest gaily reflecting the sun. You found the portholes open and busy as people and goods streamed in. Once inside the great ship, you found your place on board and settled in. With the bell ringing and music playing, we pulled up the gangplank and embarked. But what kind of a ride did you come along for this morning? Are you here for a pleasure trip, complete with food and cake? Are you here for a leisurely hour of easy sailing? Or did you show up here expecting to be put to work? Did you imagine that there might be some rope burns and sunburns and fear and anxiety during today's trip? Did you imagine that you might be challenged and changed by your voyage here? Did you wonder where we would all go together? The thing I know about this church is that when it puts up its sails, it can go somewhere. Facing the seas of change and need, if and when First Parish in Concord puts up its sails, it can go somewhere. It can be a force for good in the lives of its members. It can be a force for good in this town and in this region. It can be a force for good in the Unitarian Universalist Association, and it can be a force for good in the world, but it has to put up its sails. And it needs the collective force of its congregation to be the wind that moves it forward. A ship anchored in a harbor is a beautiful thing, but staying in harbor is not what ships were built for. A ship anchored in a harbor can house many people, but it cannot take them anywhere. To go places, a ship needs deckhands, and it needs wind. First Parish in Concord needs volunteer hours, and it needs money. Without either, it would remain anchored in the harbor with its sails furled. When our slightly tipsy captain pulled his sailboat up to the slip and my friend and I stepped out onto dry land again, we were so relieved we got a little bit teary. She and I were unnerved by the whole experience and wondered why we'd not asked more questions beforehand. As far as I know, neither of us has been on a sailboat since. And at the same time, we both realize that we are the type of people who would much rather try something new than stay safely in our routine. We are both the type of people who insist on trusting others and doing our best and dealing with life's obstacles as they come. We are both the type of people who would rather go somewhere than to stay stuck. We both believe life is to be lived. We both believe in generosity and in grace. Your annual pledge campaign team has just unfurled the sails of the USS First Parish. They've made sure the ship is seaworthy. They've brought all the needed provisions on board. And now we sit together, loosely tied to the dock. Shall we go someplace together? It's a perfect day for sailing. Will there be wind in our sails? We need a good, steady breeze, nothing more. All cleverness aside, this is the moment to decide how much you will give to your church in the coming year. It is the moment to decide how far and how fast you want First Parish in Concord to go. It is the moment to bring your most generous self to the task. We are all deckhands. Ours is a marvelous ship. See her sails gleam. I invite you to be the wind in our sails. I invite you to fill out a pledge card and to bring it forward. You'll find pledge cards in your pew. Take a moment and think about or even talk about how much money you will promise to give First Parish in Concord in the coming fiscal year. Fill in your information and a dollar figure. Then put the card back in the envelope and bring it down front. Together, let us show our commitment on this celebration Sunday.